Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello, welcome in. Monday edition of the Hoosier Report. Glad you're with us. We've got a lot to get to today, a busy show. I hope that the Kentucky Derby was good to you. I know if you went, the weather was, I'm sure, miserable at times, but the race, obviously crazy. It's kind of been the discussion of sports radio and social media and local media and everything out there right now. So we're going to veer away from that a little bit today to get back on course with our IU stuff and our Southern Indiana sports discussion. But no question about it, crazy, crazy day, crazy finish, rather, I should say, at the Derby on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. Have never seen anything like that. Don't know that we'll ever see anything like that again. And lots of opinions out there about what the right answer is from the stewards of the race, whether they made the right call, whether they should have let the race stand as it was. I hope that you weren't somebody that got the winning ticket drawn or made a bet on the winner and had temporary glory there for a few minutes before you realized that there very likely could be a change in that race. That would only add maybe to the misery of the day, especially if you were at the track and wet and miserable. But nonetheless, another Derby in the books. Let's take a look at the guest lineup today. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one, we'll have our Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We've got some recruiting notes to get to. Mr. and Miss Basketball handed out yesterday at the Indianapolis Star Sports Awards, and Indiana sweeps both of those awards. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the program today as well. Also, I mentioned plenty of recruiting stuff to get to as well. And the Hoosier Hills Conference baseball tournament, I think it's always a good gauge and also a signal that we are really beginning that final march home to the end of the school year and the end of high school sports for the 2018-19 calendar. The tournament starts tonight. It continues with semifinals on Wednesday, championship game on Friday, and it's always fun. We've got a lot of good local teams in that will compete for a title, and it's a good gauge for the sectional because, obviously, outside of Columbus East in the Hoosier Hills Conference, all of those teams are in the same baseball sectional as well. So we'll talk about that bracket coming up. And a couple other notes in the first segment, our Hoosier headlines. Later in the program, as always on Mondays, Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star, he is with me. We'll talk IU basketball, maybe a little IU football, and even a little IU baseball as well, time pending. And then later in the show, Chad Gilbert, Charlestown's athletic director and the IHSA board member for our area, will join us. Lots of rule changes of interest in high school sports. I know Kyle Neddenrip of the Indianapolis Star, who we didn't have a Friday show because of the Oaks, but he had a really good piece out this week that summarized a lot of big changes, really, not just rules by the IHSA recently in one of their meetings, but also reclassification of teams, which affects some of our local basketball teams and other sports as well in their sectional. So a lot of changes going on at the state level, and Chad will talk about some of that and other items as well today. That's the lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. You'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU sports news and Southern Indiana sports news. We do this each day to start the show here on the Big X Sports Radio. And IU sweeps the Mr. and Miss Basketball awards that were handed out Sunday night at the very, very nice Indy Star Sports Awards. Of course, a lot of those awards they hand out are Indianapolis-centric, geared toward kids from the Stars' main coverage area. But the Mr. and Miss Basketball Awards, which are actually owned by the Indianapolis Star, are part of that ceremony as well, and kind of the big deal that brings a statewide audience to that. So Mr. Basketball, no surprise. Trace Jackson Davis of Center Grove, he wins the award. When the finalists were announced, even before the finalists were announced, it was clear that he is the top senior in high school basketball for this past season. Would have been interesting had him and Keon Brooks, had Keon stayed at Fort Wayne North. I think he could have given Trace Jackson Davis a run for his money with that award. Obviously, he opted to go to La Lemire, which is outside of the IHSA's jurisdiction, and therefore forfeiting his opportunity to compete for that award. So Trace Jackson Davis, very rightfully so, Mr. Basketball for 2018-19. Interesting as well on the Miss Basketball side of things, lots of Southern Indiana representation for that award this year. Jory Allen of Bedford North Lawrence, who will play women's basketball at Indiana, she was the winner of the award last night, but coming in second in the voting right in our backyard, not far from Floyd County, Clark County, was North Harrison's Lily Hatton. She came in second in voting for the Miss Basketball Award in the state of Indiana as well. Obviously a big accomplishment for her after a great, great high school basketball career that included a couple trips to Indianapolis to play in state championship games. Archie Miller, the first IU coach to land back-to-back Mr. Basketball winners. Of course, Romeo Langford last year, Trace Jackson Davis this year, since Bob Knight did it in 1997 and 1998. Who were the two players back-to-back? Luke Recker and Tom Coverdale. Luke Recker was 1997. Tom Coverdale was 1998. Those were the last two back-to-back Mr. Basketballs landed by the IU program, and of course it was back when Bob Knight was the coach. Also, some recruiting stuff to get to. This is big, and I don't know that I saw this coming necessarily, and I also don't know that this is reason to jump up and down and celebrate yet, but Lester Quinones, the 6'5", 215-pound shooting guard from IMG Academy, we knew he was going to decide on May 10th coming up later this week. I believe that's Friday. But he had a number of schools he was still considering. I think he was down to four or five schools. Now, over the weekend, he tweeted out that he's down to two schools. Memphis, who has kind of been viewed, I think, by a lot of people as the front runner, and Indiana, who I think has kind of been viewed even on a national level by people as a school that's really been gaining ground with Quinones here over the final weeks of his college recruitment, especially after his visit to Bloomington a few weeks ago. He eliminated LSU, which is not a big surprise. I think you're going to see other people like Trendon Watford steer away from there as well. Just an opinion, given some of the problems that are going on or have went on there, given the fact that it's the college basketball trials, kind of, it's Arizona at the forefront of that right now. But in the back of your mind, if you're a player that's considering college, you know what's going on. You know what's been accused at LSU. We'll see how it plays out permanently or long-term. But he eliminated LSU. Quinones also eliminated Maryland and Michigan. So two other Big Ten schools that he was considering have been sliced from his list. Again, Memphis and Indiana is where he will choose on May 10th, coming up on Friday. Adam Zagoria, who we've had on this program before, he runs Zags Blog, which is kind of a great national recruiting source with maybe a East Coast lean to it. He had an interview with Lester, and I thought a couple quotes that were interesting. On Indiana, he said, quote, "Coach Miller and my family are very close, and my family loved the visit there. I really like their strength trainer and feel he'll help me get to where I want to be. They have a great tradition, and I really connected with the returning players on my visit." I thought that was a really strong quote. Here's what he said about Memphis. Quote, "My relationship with Penny and Mike," that's Penny Hardaway, the head coach, and Mike Miller, the assistant coach, both former NBA players, is really good. "We've built a great bond, and they have a plan to have a special team next year to win a national championship." You know, good stuff. He's right. Memphis is getting a lot of big-time players, but boy, lots of thoughts there, I thought, in his mention of Indiana, talking about relationships, talking about something as in-depth as the strength trainer, talking about the tradition, talking about returning players and how well he connected with them. I don't know how I feel about this, but I think Indiana maybe has a better shot than we think. I don't know that they're going to get him ultimately, but it's clear that it has become a real decision that he truly is considering Indiana as well. That's clear to me by what he said about the program and about the coaches and about his visit. I've said this before, and we spend a lot of time probably on this in the offseason because there's not as much going on, but Cliff Marshall, the strength and conditioning coach, who does a great job not just with the players on the court, off the court, in the sand pit, whatever they're doing in the off season to get ready, get at least their bodies and their physiques ready for the grueling Big Ten basketball season that lies ahead for next year. Not only does he do a good job, obviously, with the players, the kids, he's well respected by them as well, that's clear, but he does a great job putting it out on social media. A lot of times that's, you know, in the middle of the summer, it's what we talk about, all the things that the IU team is doing to get ready for the upcoming season and the crazy workouts and the crazy drills where they've got the air mask on to get oxygen and things like that, or, you know, just whatever it may be. Clearly, he does a good job promoting what his role is at Indiana. I think it's very interesting. It kind of reinforces some of the things that we've talked about with him, that it's not just the head coach any longer. It's not just the coaching staff any longer. It's not just the facilities any longer. It's not just the tradition or the success or the projected success for a program next year any longer in the recruiting process. Sometimes it's things as simple as the strength and conditioning coach and how they're 30 minutes or an hour together over a 48, you know, two full day official visit goes, that a player who has NBA visions and a professional basketball thought to him, you know, those are sometimes the things that really stick out that maybe separate you from another program that is getting high interest from a player. So once again, Cliff Marshall mentioned in a recruiting context as well, and I find that very interesting. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what happens with Lester Quinones. Does he shock a lot of people and choose Indiana? Is this just kind of a late maybe a trial and for him to test out another school and make it a true decision when he comes down to it on Friday? I think he likes Indiana, so we'll see what happens. Can Indiana overthrow Michigan, the favorite in this recruitment? Would be a huge pickup, especially at this point for Indiana in the 2019 class. Romeo Langford enjoying some Derby festivities as well over the weekend. He was at the Barnstable Brown Party in Louisville that always takes place on Friday night. It's always interesting to see the celebrities that come in town. Some are there every year, no question about that. Others, maybe some of the bigger names you get just occasionally that pop in here or there. And it's always interesting to me to see what some of these suckers are wearing. It's just unbelievable, the fashion or the style that some of them have or think that they have maybe. But the funny thing about Romeo was he came with Master P, who I would say was probably a popular rapper when I was in high school or maybe even in middle school, and now has become more of a, I guess, community activist. He's done a lot of work in Louisville, real positive things in the West End of Louisville to help that situation there. And he invited Romeo and his family to go to the Barnstable Brown Party on Louisville. But probably the funniest thing of the night was the Lexington Herald Leader, the newspaper obviously in Lexington, Kentucky, they tweeted out a picture of Master P getting interviewed on the red carpet. Romeo Langford is standing to his side, and the text of the tweet says, "Master P and his son Romeo Langford," his son Romeo Langford, "arrive at the Barnstable Brown Party in Louisville." And of course, Master P had a son named Romeo, Little Romeo or something like that was his rap name, but obviously not Romeo Langford. So that drew a big response from people on Twitter and social media, and Lexington Herald finally deleted the tweet. I think they may have even put out a corrected tweet as well. But Romeo Langford, probably one of the first, I don't know that it's the first, but probably one of the first of celebrity affairs for him over the course of his career, however long that may last. And of course, we still believe that he's headed to the NBA draft. And that's going to be another interesting discussion we'll have through a lot of this month as the draft comes in June. But he's enjoying, it looks like at least, some Derby festivities over the weekend. Lots of action with the AAU circuit. Obviously, the coaches not able to get on the road this weekend. That was the only time of the spring last weekend that coaches will be able to evaluate things. But Indiana Elite won a pretty premier tournament this weekend. It's the Bill Hensley Run and Slam All-Star Classic up in Fort Wayne at the, I guess it used to be the Spies Fieldhouse. I'm not sure if it's still called that or not. But that team, of course, includes Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway, who just picked up offers from the IU team. Also of interest, Christian Lander, who's a young guy playing up on that senior-to-be team. He was on the team as well. And even Jeffersonville's Trey Coleman on that team also. A very, very talented team. They won the championship. They will win a lot of championships this spring and summer with that Indiana Elite 2020 team as well. One high school baseball note, the Hoosier Hills Conference Tournament, it begins tonight. It's a really good setup. It's eight teams, so it's a double elimination bracket. And what it basically boils down to is Bedford at Seymour tonight in the top half of the bracket. Also, New Albany at Jennings County tonight. Those winners, those losers will play each other on Wednesday. Bottom half of the bracket tonight, Jeffersonville is at Madison, Columbus East is at Floyd Central. So potentially, if things work out the way that we hope they do for a competitive factor, Bedford and New Albany would play at New Albany on Wednesday. And then, of course, locally, Jeffersonville and Floyd Central could play at Floyd Central on Wednesday as well in the two semifinals, and then the winners of those games would hook up Friday for the HHC championship. However, I understand Columbus East is really talented. They've got two or three really, really good pitchers, and they play at Floyd Central tonight, so we'll see if Floyd Central is able to pull an upset there in advance, but it could be Jeff and Columbus East in that other semifinal. But the good news is, no matter who wins tonight, we're going to be with you for a semifinal. We'll either be covering New Albany or Jeffersonville, Floyd Central, one of those combinations, on Wednesday in the semifinal game, and that's a 6 o'clock game, 6 o'clock first pitch, and then we'll follow a local team, and I think we're somewhat guaranteed a local team in the championship as well on Friday. We'll have that game at 6 o'clock for you as well here on the Big X Sports Radio. Also, high school baseball last night, the sectional pairings out. Lots of local interesting matchups. I'll run through those a little bit later in the program today. But the big one in 4A at Bedford North Lawrence, right out of the gate in the bye game on Friday, New Albany and Jeffersonville, perhaps the two favorites in that sectional. I think you got to include Floyd Central in that grouping as well, but New Albany and Jeff drew each other right out of the gate in that baseball sectional. One other note before we get out of here in the first segment, Eric Gordon. I just wanted to mention him really quick. Former IU player, 30 points. He had 7 3-pointers, 7 of 14 as Houston won over the weekend, 126-121 over obviously top-seeded Golden State. He continues to have, Eric Gordon does, just a tremendous NBA career. He's not always the star. He doesn't always score 20 or 30 points, but he's always solid and consistent. And a lot of times, I think he's still doing it from a six-man type role for the Houston team. So just wanted to mention that. He's had an unbelievable, long-standing NBA career with no concern, I don't think, of any time soon of that NBA career coming to an end for him. So hats off to Eric Gordon. Those are Hoosier headlines for this Monday, May 6th edition of the program. We'll head to a commercial break. We'll come back with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We'll talk Trace Jackson Davis winning Mr. Basketball. We'll talk IU basketball in general, some other topics in sports as well. Coming up next here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back. Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star is with us. Zach is the IU insider for the Star, and he joins us on Mondays to talk all things IU basketball and maybe even football and baseball as well. Zach, Mr. Basketball, I should say Indy Star, Mr. Basketball, since I'm talking to Mr. IU insider for the Star himself, crowned last night, Trace Jackson Davis, the winner from Center Grove, obviously no surprise there. But it is, I think, worth noting, and I mentioned this in the first segment today, that first back-to-back winners that Indiana has landed, Mr. Basketball winners, since back in the mid-90s when it was Luke Recker and Tom Coverdale that Bob Knight recruited in back-to-back years to Indiana. Indiana Mr. Basketball, even though the Indiana-Kentucky series overall, I think, may have lost a little luster or attention, Mr. Basketball has held that attention. It's still a big award. It's still a big deal in our basketball-crazy state. And so for Archie Miller to land two Mr. Basketballs back-to-back very early in his coaching years at Indiana, I think it's a big deal.
No, I think you're absolutely right. If we had a more extended conversation, I think you'd find me among those that sometimes, I don't want to say rolls my eyes at, but feels that the whole idea of Indiana locking down the borders and recruiting predominantly in-state prospects is just not realistic in this day and age, and probably never really was. But I think some of that sort of lore, if you will, is kind of remembered through rose-colored eyelids and sort of the mist of history. But that said, I do think that it is fair to say that when you're talking about Mr. Basketball, that it's a point of pride for the fan base. It's also just, you know, Indiana is annually one of the best basketball states in the country. If you are consistently in the mix for and landing players who are finalists for Mr. Basketball, players who win Mr. Basketball, then obviously, number one, your recruiting message is resonating, and number two, you're typically landing really talented players. Now, obviously, you know, these two won't play together because Romeo Langford is headed to the NBA, but I think from Indiana's perspective, it's nothing but good signs when you're getting a guy like Trace Jackson Davis, a guy obviously like Romeo Langford, and then if we even start to spin it forward to 2020, we're seeing Indiana heavily involved with players like Anthony Leal and Trey Galloway that you would imagine would be kind of in the mix for this award here in about a year's time. I think all of that is very good for IU.
Talking with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. I wasn't there. I was at the ceremony a year ago, though, with Romeo Langford when he was named Mr. Basketball winner back in 2018. You know, the award, I said, still carries a lot of weight in the state, and that's always been, I think, a big deal. But what you guys and what the Indy Star have done to make that presentation, to have some finalists, to have the video wall, to have the lights, to have all the sounds, to make it a big celebration. You can maybe speak on that a little bit more than I, but it's really become a big production how Mr. Miss Basketball and some other awards as well are given out on that night.
Yeah, and I listen, all credit should go to Matt Glinesk and his team, and I'm not just saying that because Matt's my editor. It really is, I mean, the planning for it, the execution of it is intensive. And it's really cool to see kind of the way that it comes together. I think it's cool to see the way that it's been embraced. I think that it's kind of a fun way to do it in a world where, I'm not saying that everything needs to cater to social media, but a world where you can get a little bit more buzz going, I guess, for lack of a better term. And the way that we've also, and it's not just us, it's a lot of different Gannett properties getting special speakers involved. I think Tim Tebow spoke at one of these down in Mississippi a few years ago, you know, just getting special presenters and things like that. And I think as much as anything else too, I think it's fun for the kids. And this is something that I've always said, like for example, and I'm not trying to ignite this debate, believe me, at least not on this show, but whenever the topic of class basketball comes up, I hear a lot of people with a lot of different viewpoints. And what I've always find myself saying is, what do the players want? I've never seen anybody ask what the players want. And it's nights like this, I think it gets to be about the kids. And I think that's good because at the end of the day, we can all love high school sports. We can all follow high school sports. Obviously it's important to your job and mine, you know, clearly. But it's important to remember too that it should be first and foremost about the athletes competing in it. And if you can give them a few more, just a few more settings where they can really be celebrated and honored, I think that's a good thing.
Zach Osterman with the Indianapolis Star is with me. How did the actual result shake out with Armon Franklin, also an IU signee in the 2019 class from Indianapolis Cathedral? He had a great senior year, and from the central part of the state, from Cathedral, I thought really made some headway in that race.
That's a good question, and I apologize. I don't have an immediate answer for
you. Okay.
I don't want to say it was presumptive with Trace Jackson Davis. You know, I think there was always kind of a strong feeling that he was a front runner. You're right. Armon Franklin had a fantastic year and was Indianapolis City Player of the Year, which is probably one of those things that's going to get overlooked when you are in a recruiting class with a Mr. Basketball. But that's, I mean, you know, think about the kind of talent you've got to beat out to win Indianapolis City Player of the Year. And to put up the numbers that he did, I've always kind of been just a little bit curious, and I have a ton of respect for the people that put together recruiting rankings. But to see the numbers that Armon Franklin puts up, to know the general, you know, sort of skill level of the players that he's facing on a daily basis or a game-by-game basis, and then see him maybe ranked a little bit lower than what you'd normally associate someone in that position to being, I've always just kind of wondered if maybe there's a gap there that's going to be closed at some point. As for the voting, I'm not completely sure on that. I could get you that information using Google.
Yeah, no big deal.
But I mean, I think it's still, just watching them go through the season, even from afar, I always just kind of felt like it was in many ways kind of Trace Jackson Davis's, race to run from the inside lane, and not that it was fait accompli that he win it. I think some other guys pushed him. I think Brandon Newman pushed him. But just the senior season that he had at Center Grove, I think it was going to be hard to deny that.
And this is a question I get a lot, and I'll pass this on to you. Do you see a scenario next year in Bloomington at IU where Trace Jackson Davis, I'm not saying he's going to be a starter, I'm not saying he's going to be a stud, I'm not saying he's going to be a leading scorer or anything like that, but do you see a scenario where he isn't a meaningful player that's receiving playing time on a consistent basis with some of the other bigs that IU will have for next year?
I don't, honestly. And I think that Indiana's front court rotation is going to be fascinating next season. That's a more general rule because you got Race Thompson coming back, Deron Davis coming back, Joey Brunk coming in, but then obviously you're also losing Evan Fitzner, Juwan Morgan, Jake Forrest, or Clifton Moore. I think that it's going to be interesting to see how kind of, in particular, how you deploy Joey Brunk, Deron Davis, Trace Jackson Davis together. Do you go for more just genuine sort of two big man lineups, twin towers kind of lineups? I think that it's fair to say not necessarily that you would expect Deron Davis to have some sort of injury problem, but that if you're Indiana, you should always plan to make sure that you're addressing depth in that area, because we've seen Deron Davis have a lot of success at times when he's been healthy in college. We've also seen him just kind of struggle with just a random and sometimes it feels like bad luck series of injuries. But a player as talented as Trace Jackson Davis, like you, I'm not going to guarantee he starts right away. I'm not saying he's going to play 33 minutes a night or anything like that right away, but I've also seen him play, and as I'm sure a lot of people have, I would be shocked if he's not, in a fairly significant role early. Maybe he's not, option one or 1A, but I think he's an awfully good piece for Indiana, or an awfully big piece for Indiana heading into next season.
We're talking IU basketball with Zach Osterman of the Indianapolis Star. We do this each Monday on the program. Along the lines of recruiting, and this is really recruiting for next season, IU has missed out so far on a number of 2019 players here over the last, month and a half or so. Harlan Beverly to Miami. Some of the names escape me. Trendon Watford still available, but we don't know exactly what may happen there. I think Indiana has gained some ground with him, at least when the LSU stuff became a reality that there could be some problems there, but I don't know where that stands now. The big name that's kind of next up to make a decision, Lester Quinones, and I may be mispronouncing his last name, so correct me if I am, but I had the same feeling with him that, you know, he likes Indiana a lot. He cared enough to make a visit, but hey, ultimately it looks like this dude's going to Memphis. You know, this is just going to be another one. This is going to be three or four now that, you know, have been mentioned with Indiana, but really there's been no traction. However, I feel a little different. I'm curious to get your thoughts because Adam Zagoria had a story over the weekend that kind of surprised me that said that Lester has sliced his list to just two schools, and it's Memphis and Indiana. And even more so when I read the quotes on Memphis from Lester and then I read what he had to say about Indiana, clearly he had some well-thought-out stuff. He got detailed talking about relationships with Coach Miller and his family. He mentioned the strength trainer at Indiana to help get him where he wants to be. He mentioned the tradition and even that he connected with players while he was on his visit that will be part of the IU roster for sure next season. I feel different about it. I feel that he's really got a decision to make now. Memphis, I'm sure, has some longevity there and some locality maybe to him being at IMG in Florida and had seen him more. But I'm curious, do you feel the same way? And do you feel like that IU maybe really does have a chance to land this player on Friday when he makes his decision?
Yeah, I think so. I think Indiana does have a chance. I'm, you know, not wanting to get too into the weeds with, you know, crystal balls and things like that. I think Memphis could be tough to beat there. And it does seem like just generally Penny Hardaway's got some good recruiting momentum at Memphis. Obviously he's got James Wiseman in the coming class. He's got a couple of other players that I think aren't committed, but are have, you know, considered sort of heavy Memphis leans. And sometimes when that happens, it just, you know, that momentum can build on itself. We've seen it happen in Indiana as much as we have, you know, anywhere really, and especially any school that might have some of that basketball heritage and tradition that in Indiana is going to have. And I think it's fair to say Memphis maybe at a different level, but still sort of has some of that. But I do think Indiana's, I mean, listen, Lester Quinones told me the same thing yesterday. He's down to IU in Memphis, so it's clear IU is going to be there all the way to the end. And the two things I always say about recruiting, number one, follow the visits. And when a kid has that detailed of a sort of an impression, I guess, of a recruiting visit, then that tells you it really did kind of pop off the page for him a little bit. That's number one. Number two, you know, this always sounds a little bit ominous, but never say never. Recruiting, I've seen all sorts of weird things happen in recruiting. I've seen all sorts of things that weren't expected, couldn't have been anticipated, but they still pop out in the end. I think Indiana's going to be all the – I think Indiana has a very, very good shot, if nothing else. I wouldn't be surprised if he picks Memphis on Friday, and then there's a wider conversation to be had about kind of where Indiana goes from here in 2019 because it's May 6th, and they've still got two scholarships open, and obviously you're kind of running out of time a little bit. A lot of guys are off the board, whether it be, you know, incoming freshmen or graduate transfers. But nevertheless, I think Indiana's got every reason to at very least be looking forward to Friday and seeing if they get some good news.
I tell you what, that was my exact next question. If Indiana does not land a Quinones, where do they turn? And I think that that's going to be very, very interesting with two scholarships available. Not that Coach Miller has to fill both of them. It would not be, I don't think, outlandish to think maybe you pocket one of those to use for a future class. But still interesting because you've got to believe that this team will add at least one player no matter what route they may have to go if it doesn't work out with Friday's decision.
I would be surprised if they only go into next season with 11 scholarship players, but I also, as you sort of allude to there, I really can't tell you where that 12th, at very least, that 12th player comes from. We haven't heard Indiana sort of seriously mentioned with another graduate transfer lately. You know, it seems like there's been Anthony Harris, there's been Lester Quinones, you mentioned Trendon Watford, but we haven't seen, there aren't a lot of new names popping up. Now, is it possible that you could go into the summer and look at maybe find yourself in another reclassification situation a la Race Thompson a couple of years ago? Sure. And that still would leave you with an open scholarship. You know, I think the other thing I would say is if it's possible to get a third player in this freshman class, I think that would be useful just from sort of a class balance perspective, because then you're only going to have two seniors this upcoming season, presuming Devontae Green withdraws from the draft and comes back, obviously, for his last year. But then after that, you'd have Joey Brunk, Justin Smith, Al Durham in one class. You've still got four guys slated for the class after them. Now just three guys slated for the class after them. But the point is, you're just kind of in a nice rhythm if you can get one more guy into this class. And then it's kind of like a 3-4, 3-4 sort of distribution that gets at that roster balance Archie Miller has always kind of craved. So to my mind, if I'm, you know, trying to look out into the murky future here, I would think it'd be more likely to see somebody added in the freshman class. But who that is, if it's not Lester Quinones, I really don't know, to be honest with you.
Interesting stuff. Zach Osterman, the Indianapolis Star, with us. A quick baseball update. I saw they beat Illinois yesterday, I believe, before we let you go.
Yeah, they did beat Illinois, but they actually lost the first two games of that series, which, you know, I think as we talked about, you know, kind of what this last month would mean for Indiana. I think a lot of that was always going to start with that first series at Illinois and then extending out into this upcoming weekend series at Michigan. Michigan swept its weekend series, so Michigan's now 14-3. In the Big Ten, Indiana's 12-6. I think Michigan had a game canceled somewhere in there, which obviously is just sort of the peril of playing in the Midwest in the spring. But Indiana's a game ahead of Iowa and Minnesota in second place in the conference. They are, I think that works out to technically 2.5 games behind Michigan, who is in first place. It's basically, I mean, number one, you don't want to disrespect Rutgers, which is not exactly a historically vested school baseball wise, but is close to 500 in the conference this year, and says that if Indiana were to win this weekend series at Michigan, then Rutgers on the last weekend of the regular season would just be a cakewalk. But on the other hand, this is basically kind of do or die time for Indiana in terms of both the Big Ten title race, probably, and then also quite possibly the chance to host a regional. They're at Kentucky midweek this week. They are at Michigan over the weekend, and then they host Louisville midweek next week. And those are obviously three really, really big, I mean, one really big series, both from an RPI perspective and also from a conference race perspective, and then also the opportunity to add a couple of really big RPI wins. And it's also worth pointing out, too, Michigan finishes the season at Nebraska. It's got Michigan's, basically, this weekend, Michigan hosting Indiana is its home weekend finale, and then they finish next weekend at Nebraska. So if you're Indiana, and you can get something from this weekend, maybe take two or three. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. I mean, Michigan has been considered the class of the league basically all year in the Big Ten. But if you can take two or three, or even sweep all three, and then you send Michigan into a really difficult situation next weekend at Nebraska while you play Rutgers at home, you've still got a chance. I think ultimately this team is almost certainly going to the NCAA tournament. I mean, it would take a monumental collapse at this point for that not to happen. But there is a longer and longer sort of odds chance of them hosting in the first weekend and winning the Big Ten tournament. That's all probably going to be decided in the next 7 to 10 days.
Will be interesting to see. Zach, thank you so much as always. Very informative chat. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to head to a quick commercial break. We'll come back with our final segment today. Chad Gilbert of the Charlestown Athletic Director, IHSA Executive Board member. He's with us on Mondays as well. Lots of rule changes in high school sports, sectional realignments as well. All of those things will be topics that we're going to talk about coming up next. Some other stuff as well with Chad when he joins us right here on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
All right, we're back. Final segment on this Monday program. It's always Chad Gilbert, Charlestown's athletic director, and an IHSA executive board member with us. And Chad, a lot to get to, but first, how was your Kentucky Derby weekend?
Man, I was a big winner all weekend. I didn't bet a race, so I kept all my money. A big winner at the Gilbert household.
I can't think of anything worse than to think you won and end up not winning. I saw a guy post a picture of what he thought was a winning ticket on social media on Twitter, only to find out a few minutes later that he lost that ticket. He didn't win it.
It looked to me the best horse won wire to wire. However, rules are rules, and if you're going to follow the rules, you know, I got a horsing buddy, and he said it's coming down. And so when he says that, he knows horses like I know basketball. So when he says that, you knew it was going to be a bad thing. Just heart-wrenching, though, for everybody involved, except the guy that won. And then whoever had that horse that paid 65-1, they were pretty happy, but everybody else pretty gut-wrenching. But, you know, you see that stuff. You think about the Saints in football. Think about some of the NCAA basketball games. More and more you see that stuff come into play, and I guess, you know, if you want to get it right, you're going to get it right.
It's so funny to follow social media reactions from anybody, whether it's a well-known media person or just your neighbor next door. Everybody has an opinion, and social media gives you a platform, gives everyone a platform now, whether it's good or bad, to express that. But the immediate reaction was, oh, this is going to be terrible for the Derby. It's going to be terrible for horse racing. This decision is just, people don't understand it. It's going to be bad for the sport. It's going to cause it to lose interest. Oh, it's just a terrible day. Well, maybe so, but all I've seen since the end of the Derby has been on national news programs, has been on Good Morning America this morning. Every sports station, whether it's local, which obviously you're going to talk about the Derby if you're in Louisville, or this area on Monday after the race on Saturday, but even the national shows on our station here on the Big X, talking about the Derby, talking about the controversy. I don't see how that's not good for anything. What is the saying? All publicity is good publicity?
You're right on that, Matt. And the thing on it is, one bet that I can guarantee you it's going to be 100% sure is there's going to be 150,000 people plus playing dress up the first Saturday in May in 2020. You can guarantee that. So don't worry about that. It's not going to be bad for the sport. There'll be 150 plus over there dressing up, betting money, and having a good time.
All right, Chad, let's get to the real business at hand. A big meeting for you and others that are on the IHSA board, I guess over a week or so ago in Indianapolis. Lots of changes finalized, lots of realignments announced in the different sports in each class. And I know it's stuff that you guys collectively have been working on for a long, long time. Let's start with the realignments. Boys basketball, no real changes in 4A, no changes in 1A with the local sectionals, but 2A and 3A, some big changes for some of our local teams.
A lot of that, Matt, has to do with the success factor. Moving people in, moving people out. And you see that more in the 2 and 3A. In 4A, there's no success other than a team bumping up. 4A is the highest you can go. Or in the case here in football, it's 5 and 6A. So you don't see a whole lot of that. But it's not an exact science. There's lots of different ways, you know, that people can look at it. Some ways are beneficial to some folks that aren't beneficial to others. One of my best friends, Neil, has been wearing me out about, we're passing this team to go here to play in the sectional, this and that. Sorry. You know, there's not much you can do about it. I feel bad for those guys that feels like it's a conspiracy against them, but it's not. There's a committee of people who work together that are ADs, and they get out the map, and they decide, you know, what sectionals are going to be the best proximity for these teams to play in, and they kind of go from there. As far as the IHSA board goes, 19 people that approve or disapprove something, a law, or a rule that comes down. So it's hard to get things to go one way or another, and you got to trust that the people that are on the committee have done the best for that sport.
I know we talked about, or I mentioned this last week, but the big change at your sectional, which you host at Charlestown, is Brownstown will no longer be in that sectional, who, of course, has been very dominant. Silver Creek kind of taking over that platform here recently, but they will exit that 3A sectional and move elsewhere. Madison will come over to that sectional now, so you'll stay at seven teams. In 2A, some big changes for our local teams, Providence and Henryville and Clarksville. They'll be paired up with Switzerland County and Southwestern, some teams leaving the sectional as well. So kind of they trade Crawford County and Paoli, who had been the two front runners in that sectional for a couple years now, out, and they get Southwestern, who was number one and beat Jeffersonville last year, into their 2A sectional.
It's funny you brought that particular sectional up, because that was one that was kind of funky when it came through. If you look at the girls' sectional on that particular sectional, it's a different sectional. It doesn't have Southwestern or Switzerland County in it. And that goes back to what we talked about at the start of the show with success factor, bumping teams in and out, where some teams in 2A and 3A in the girls are different than 2A, 3A in the boys. And, again, it's kind of weird how the stuff works out, but hopefully it gives everybody the best opportunity, the safest opportunity to play for a state championship.
Talking with Chad Gilbert. Chad is Charlestown's athletic director and also an IHSA executive board member. He's with us on Mondays. There were a lot of other rule changes, modifications, announcements that the IHSA made following your last meeting. I know there's a new mercy rule, an update to that rule in football. There's been some further discussion about transfers, which is just simply becoming rampant. We talk so much now about college basketball transfers and graduate transfers. As the high school year ends, the question is, who's going to be the big basketball transfer or two? Will we have any this year locally? It used to just be, oh, kids in Louisville transfer all the time. They go this program to that program, or players in Indianapolis transfer all the time. It's everywhere now, including right here in our local area. So pick and choose a couple maybe key things you think listeners might be most interested to hear about as far as some rule changes that you were a part of or know about in your role with the IHSA that have recently been announced and recently been changed.
One thing is the mercy rule. We'll start off in football. And that, you know, give an opportunity for the clock to run, give an opportunity for kids to get out there, because some teams just get outmatched. And the issue with that one that kind of went hand in hand was to add more quarters to football. So in other words, instead of being able to play five quarters, a football player can play six quarters in a week. The rationale behind that is, all right, if we're in this game that's a mercy rule, I can play my JV guys in the second half, in the third and fourth quarter, and then still have four quarters to turn around on Monday and play a JV game. So that's where that rationale, that thought process went in for the extra quarters for football, and then maybe an opportunity where there's not so many mercy rules where they can play the team that's dominating can play their JV in the second half. And with that mercy rule, something, you know, you don't want to humiliate teams. You want to get people out of there. You don't want to get kids hurt. I think tempers flare when teams are scoring, running, and I don't want to say the score is running it up, because a lot of that stuff, I don't see that. I see just guys out there doing their thing, and it just so happens that that team is that much better than the team that's getting beat. So hopefully that will eliminate that and not cause any embarrassment, not cause any grief, and give kids an opportunity to play. The transfer rule you talked about, is there a high school transfer portal? You might like the NCAA. I don't know if that's coming down the pipe or not. But, you know, that is an ongoing thing. I think with the more trainers you see, the more head coaches involved in travel programs, the more that'll probably come down the pipe. One thing that the IHSA had a proposal to come up with is a having a kid being allowed to transfer after their freshman year. Something, I don't know, that may be good, something that may be bad, I don't know, but something that us as a group have to figure out, something that we can do to get this thing right, because it is running rampant, and there's a lot of stuff that goes involved with that, and there's a lot of legitimate transfers. You know, this stuff is just not a cheating game like everybody thinks it is. You know, this kid's going here. A lot of things are for legitimate reasons. I've said on those things, and it's hard for those kids to be in those situations. They don't want to be in those situations. I'm sure in other certain situations, people are trying to step across their boundaries, and that's just like anything in life. People try to take advantage of things when they can, and others don't, you know. So it's something that we'll have to take a look at, and something we'll have to try to revamp. And something, again, that'll be best for student athletes.
Chad, hard to believe the school year is with what? Were we within 3 weeks for most local school systems from being over?
It's winding down. Yes.
High school baseball sectional pairings out yesterday. We'll be talking high school basketball a little bit more in June because of the summer basketball. It's going to be even more important this summer with college coaches able to come out those last two weekends at certain high school basketball events. But we're just about wrapped up for this high school sports season in 2018-19.
You know, we're crunching in now. We've had a good spring as far as weather goes for the most part, last couple weeks. And we've gotten a lot of rain out. So we're jamming in these last couple weeks before sectional, getting as many games in as possible, getting our kids where they had the best opportunity to be successful come sectional time. Track conferences this week, track sectionals next week. We've got 2 weeks of baseball, softball, and their sectionals right around the corner. Tennis creeping up here quick, and so is boys golf. So, you know, like you said, stuff's creeping up quick. It's going to be summertime. It's going to be time for kids to be sharpening their skills again and start up the 2020 season.
Thank you, Chad. Great chat. We'll do it again next Monday.
Thanks for everything you do, Matt. Appreciate the run.
All right, Chad Gilbert with us on Monday. A quick look at the baseball pairings that came out last night from Indianapolis as well. 4A, sectional 15, it's going to be played at Bedford North Lawrence. Your first round games, Jennings County takes on Bedford North Lawrence. Floyd Central takes on Seymour. Then the next day, the semifinal round, will be the winners of games 1 and 2. The bye game, Jeffersonville versus New Albany. That will be fun right out of the gate for both of those teams. Sectional 30, it's a 3A sectional at North Harrison. That's where Silver Creek and Providence are at. Game 1 is Brownstown against Scottsburg. Game 2, Silver Creek against Salem. Game 3 is Cordon against Charlestown. Game 4, North Harrison against Providence. So if Silver Creek and Providence are going to meet for a sectional championship or in the sectional, it is going to come in the sectional championship game. We'll take a further look at that later this week. Have a great Monday. Back with you tomorrow. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.